Welcome to the Whiskey, Jazz, and Leadership Podcast. Subscribe now so you don't miss a drop of straight talk you can't get anywhere else. We discuss the whiskeys to drink, music to listen to, and what it really takes to be an effective leader. I'm your host, Galen Bingham, the Leadership Strategist. Tonight's guest, founder and chief consultant at Silent Rock Educational Services, Dr. Precious Boyle. Hey, what you drinking? Guys, you better get something. You better get something to drink. And as a matter of fact, you might want to make sure you don't have any distractions around, because you're going to want to be cued into this conversation. There are some people who come into your life like a flash, and you spend time wondering, what in the world was that? And that's exactly what happened with this guest that I'm going to bring to you. This is someone who I met in a very, very special program. Many of my friends that you've heard from, we all went through this emotional intelligence training together. It was hosted by the season three guest, Miss Michelle Navarez. And I keep bringing my colleagues in. Well, this is another colleague, but we met a couple of times. But oh my gosh, she has been on my mind since forever. We've got common backgrounds, common friends, common experiences. But I'm just going to bring her in. Dr. Precious Boyle, or Dr. Precious, how are you doing? What's going on? Welcome to the show.
What's up, Galen? Thanks for having me. This is an absolute honor.
You know, we've been trying to make this happen for a while. We had a couple of near starts, but that just meant that the universe wasn't quite ready for us.
Yep, but here we are.
I've got a bunch of questions for you, because we haven't been in the same space for a while. I mean, you've supported some of my projects, I've supported some of your projects, but we haven't been in the same space for a while. So I've got some questions to catch up with you on. But everyone knows that this conversation doesn't get off to a safe footing until I ask, so what you drinking?
What am I drinking? Good question. So I'm not an alcohol drinker. I have found this this product called Better Than Booze. It's out of Nashville, female creator out of Nashville. It is a line of non-alcoholic mixed drinks. And so what I'm drinking today is the Elderberry G&T, which is inspired by gin and tonic.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So now I knew that you were going to create new space. I had no idea that we were going to start by just the drink selection, because I have never heard of a line of non-alcoholic, but alcoholic-inspired beverages.
Right? Yeah. So a friend, my best friend from college, Yaquetta Crockett, she hosted a swap party in Nashville a couple of weekends ago. And our girlfriends who live here in Memphis, we all drove up to support her. Literally a lot of women in a room swapping clothes and vendor spaces. And Better Than Booze was one of the sponsors. And it was like, what is this magic? Because I'm often in spaces where people are drinking and I don't drink. So I'm ordering, you know, give me your strongest Shirley Temple.
Give me a Sprite with a lime. Drop a lime in that Sprite for me.
So this was perfect for me to be included with everyone else and still not, you know, not have the alcohol in it, because that's just not my preference. It's absolutely delicious.
Oh my gosh. I got to look it up. I got to find it. I need to have some in my stash. Well, as everyone knows, I put a lot of thought into the whiskeys that I drink based upon my connection or my association with my guests. So since we have been working on trying to make this happen for so long, I decided that once we finally got this on the docket, I decided back then that I was going to drink some Four Roses. You are full of appreciation. Every post that I see from you, every video that I see from you, every product that I see come from you, you're just spilling over with appreciation. So I've got Four Roses. I'm going to give you all four of these roses. But Four Roses is, this is Small Batch Select. And this is one that is often near the top shelf of bars where there is a curation, where the bartender has really thought about what to bring in. You know, anyone can build a bar and just get some Jack Daniels and put that up there. But usually when I see Four Roses Select, I can tell that there was some care, there was some thought, and this is usually sitting on the top shelf. So that's what I thought about when I heard that we were actually going to be able to nail this down. So I'm going to crack this open, get this started.
Listen, beautiful. I receive all of that.
All right, let me go pour a little bit.
Pour it in.
All right. Oh yeah, this is all of what I anticipate this conversation to be. Okay, well, so to make sure that I don't gloat and fawn over you, I would love for you to share a little bit about your background, because you've done a little bit of everything, and even the things that you don't do professionally or in an ordained sense, people think you are ordained. People think that you are professional, even when you're just, you know, just showing up. So talk a little bit about your background so that we can get into this conversation, just like I'm going to get into this Four Roses.
Yeah, it's hilarious because, yes, people often associate me with ministry, with being a preacher of some sort. At my last job, I was Reverend Dr. Precious Boyle. It was very funny. Everybody thought it was hilarious, but it was the way that they saw me. And I don't shy away from that. I don't shy away from my beliefs. I am not a minister. I am not an ordained minister, but I do see my work as ministry. I do feel like what I'm doing is what I'm called to do. And so I think that's what people feel and experience when they're around me. But I am, Galen, listen, I'm from the dirt roads of Alabama. That is where I'm from. I am from straight up climbing trees, running from rattlesnakes, the whole nine. I am from the dirt roads of Alabama. I grew up one of five, single mom, very close-knit family, you know, holidays all together. That's home for me. Alabama is home for me. I was I was deemed very early on as the smart one. And that label has brought me joy and struggle. And out of that grew a lot of the things that I talk about today. I'm a teacher by trade. I taught for 13 years, I believe, in the classroom before going into administration and coaching. Did a lot of work becoming kind of a coach of coaches. In the education nonprofit leading educators, which was where I think I grew into more of myself. I was given the license and the allowances and the space to grow into more of myself. That was the first time that I'd had professional development that was focused on who I wanted to be as opposed to what I could contribute. That's how I got to the emotional intelligence sessions with you guys. And I began to see the light, like, wait a minute, people are like full-time coaching people. Like, that's their real job. I think I probably asked you that at dinner. Like, this your real job? Like, you wait, like for real? But y'all poured so much into me. And eventually I left Leading Educators and started Silent Rock Educational Services. I started Silent Rock actually in 2017, but what grew out of the time that I spent with you all is more of honing of the craft, more of figuring out, okay, what does this actually look like for me in purpose and ministry the way I do me, where the focus is leadership awareness, self-awareness, emotional intelligence, teaching everyday people how to live extraordinary lives through everyday emotional intelligence. That's what we do. We just want you to be who you say you are.
Oh, oh my gosh. There's so much to dig into from what you just shared. I am not going to resist the temptation to throw out one of my favorite quotes from my favorite musician of all time, and that's Miles Davis. And Miles Davis famously said, "Sometimes you have to play a long time to learn how to play like yourself." And that just sums up what I heard you just say, that your passion is in helping other people play like themselves. And when you're doing it, folks don't know what they're watching, because you are Coltrane. I'm staring at a picture of John Coltrane, can't remember his name. But John Coltrane said at the end of his career, towards the end of his life, when he played one of the most iconic renditions, his piece of work that people often attribute to him, and that is A Love Supreme, he said he was playing for God and everyone else was just listening.
Yeah, that's truth. I talk about it this way. I feel like when I am in my element, I am vesseling. I am literally just being a vessel for whatever it is. And that's my prayer before I get onto any call or before I do anything, you know, in this ministry that is what I do. Lord, help me to be a vessel for whatever it is you would have the person that I'm connecting to see, hear, or experience that will push them closer to who you've called them to be in the earth.
Oh my gosh.
That's my prayer. I'm just vesseling.
Well, I approach that moment slightly different and with a lot less reverence. Usually when I talked about this before, when I get into a coaching session with a senior executive and they tell me what they want to work on, if my first thought is, well, good Lord, I see why you need a coach for that one, because I ain't got nothing for you. I can't, Yeah. I'm kind of trying to figure out how we're going to fix this too. Usually when that's my response, that's when we have an amazing conversation, because if it's something that I've done before, if it's something that I know how to do, then Lord help us, because Galen's going to show up and try to tell this dude what to do and how to solve it and how to fix it. But when it's clear that I ain't got nothing to do with this. Clearly. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. So we're getting deep into this quickly, because that's just the energy that you emit. I want to back us up just a little bit, because this is gonna launch the conversation in the more traditional way. So you've shared a little bit about your background. And you made it clear that every time I've talked to you about this, you said, but Galen, I don't drink alcohol, right? Yeah, but Galen, I don't drink alcohol. But Dr. Precious, you know, it's really not okay, but I don't drink alcohol. And I explained to you finally that the metaphor of whiskey, jazz, and leadership is a lot of what we talk about here. And so the metaphor of whiskey is, in my eyes, doing what you enjoy with the people you enjoyed with, so your crew, and not really caring about what the other folks might say about what you're doing, because they're not part of your crew and they probably wouldn't get it even if you could explain it to them. It's like getting locked into the folks who get you. That's whiskey for me, the social element of it. Jazz is having the courage to get into the flow, to get from here to where you need to be, even when you don't have sheet music in front of you, even when things aren't spelled out, having the courage to step into that space and say, okay, well, let's figure this out together. And then the confidence that this is gonna end well and it's gonna sound nice and people are gonna enjoy it. And then the metaphor of leadership for me is nothing is ever going to happen until somebody makes it happen. Until someone steps in and says, okay, we're going to take this first step. Or as Dr. King said, you know, taking the first step, although you can't see the rest of the staircase, we're going to start today. And until someone does that, then usually we're just going to be sitting around talking about doing this someday, which is my least favorite phrase in all of my coaching experience, someday. So that for me is how this metaphor fits together. How does that work for you? Or what's your take on this idea, this name for a podcast, Whiskey, Jazz, and Leadership?
Yeah, so I had some time to think about this because I'm coming on to this podcast, like I've got to figure out like what is the connection for me? Like I hear your connection. And the phrase that came up for me when I put all of those together, Whiskey, Jazz, and Leadership, is ease with a little bit of bite. That's the phrase that comes up for me. There's an ease to leadership when you know who you are and you're operating in that freedom of who you are. There's an ease to it. But that ease comes with a little bit of bite because sometimes we're committed to an outdated version of who we are. We're committed to a version of ourselves that we're no longer that. And that version, that commitment to that version of ourselves makes it hard to find that freedom. So when I think about Whiskey, Jazz, and Leadership all mixing together, it's a constant evolution of who we are and recognizing who we are and where we fit in with where life has us right now.
Wow. I know that you claim that you're not an ordained minister, and I'm going to let you keep that for a second. I'm going to let you have that. Although I've got my doubts. Lots of amen moments in that. I want you to go back and talk a little bit about this idea of there being an outdated version of who you are, because that really captured my imagination. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I'll speak from this example for me. As a teacher moving into leadership, when you are a teacher, the version of you that needs to show up is the version that commands a classroom of 30 people, 30 young people, where you are the established authority. You are the person in charge. They are not going to buck against it for the most part. They're going to live in your structure. When you transition to leadership of adults, it is no longer confined to that one block of classes that you have, those students who are going to respond exactly how you've planned for them to respond. That's when the jazz needs to actually come into play. And if you are operating as a leader on the version of you that you needed to be as a teacher, you're operating on an outdated version. And that version that shows up as the teacher when you're actually leading adults can be condescending, can be abrasive, unforgiving, can be all the negative images of leadership that we've ever seen because we haven't made that transition. How you treat students, how you conduct the classroom and set a structure for one group of people is not necessarily how it looks when you're conducting a different group of people. And a lot of us are operating on this outdated version of who we needed to be for a season in our lives. And that version of us no longer works for where we are. Those rules don't apply anymore. Those survival tactics, we don't need those anymore. We're in a different space.
Wow. You know, and this reminds me of a lot of the leaders that I work with, particularly in manufacturing and in consumer packaged goods industries. Usually the way you make your way to management, I wouldn't necessarily call it leadership yet, but the way you make your way to management is by being a really good individual contributor. I can do a thing really well, and I do a thing really well for so long, eventually they say, hey, why don't you manage a group of people who are doing that thing that you did very well? And there's always this temptation to step back into, well, let me show you how to do this thing. Because, I mean, you know, hey, look, the reason I got here is because I'm pretty good at doing this thing. Let me just sit over there and pay attention and maybe you can learn how to do this thing. And although that gets immediate results, It's expedient. It very rarely develops the other people around you. And it very rarely matures the culture. And I see people doing that all the time. I'm going to admit, I did that a couple times myself. I still have bruises from that. Talk a little bit about why that is so tempting for people to go back and do the thing that they did in order to get to the seat that they're in.
Because it worked. It just outright worked for us. And that's a place of familiarity. That's comfort. I don't need to stretch myself to do what I already know how to do. I can just show you over and over again how to do that. And that's great. But I think the challenge with that is that puts the attention on the what, not the how. Myself, I was a great individual contributor. I'm going to make you look so good as the principal. I mean, I'm going to go after every award. We're going to be on the news. Like, people are going to come investigate how the scores got so high. I'm going to teach my butt off in that classroom. It's going to be amazing. But when I'm the leader and all the weight is on me and I'm trying to bring that same energy there, that's not who I need to be. I can't go back in and teach all the classes. It doesn't make sense. And so if my focus is only on the what and not on the how, I'm not bringing anybody with me. I'm not encouraging and empowering the people around me. And that's ego. That's ego gets in our way. We've been celebrated. And that's some of the things that I talk about in the journal, the reinforced characteristics that have gotten us to this point, right? So we've been celebrated for doing these great and wonderful things, for having this type of characteristic, being this type of contributor. We've been celebrated for that. But it no longer needs to show up that way. And when we don't recognize that our characteristics need to show up differently based on the seat that we're in, we're playing a dangerous game. It's just poor stewardship and it's dangerous.
Wow. Wow. And you know, another thing that I heard you talk about specifically, and now you're talking about it indirectly, and it's this idea of allowing ourselves to evolve. And that sounds very catchy. And if there's not a bumper sticker, then maybe I need to go out and create one, because that sounds like something people would ascribe to. I'm allowing myself to evolve. I'm evolving. But that's hard.
It is terrifying.
See, I love how you just cut right to the quick, right?
It's terrifying. But evolution is being able to disagree with things that I used to agree with, even about myself. Yeah. I used to agree with that version of myself. That's why it worked for me. But as I learn more and as I evolve into a better version of who I am, I can't still be committed to that, those characteristics or that version, because I'm going to sabotage myself. It's the shadow side of our values. It's the overuse of our values that create that shadow side for us, that if we are not recognizing the evolution of ourselves, then we're going to stay committed to a version that no longer serves us. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, one of the things that you and I shared, and we talked about this earlier, was this experience around emotional intelligence and how to incorporate that into our coaching practice. And, you know, I'm going to tell a little bit on myself here, in that when I signed up for that course, I was expecting that I was going to learn content and then teach other people. That's as far as it was explained to me. Galen, would you come learn this content and then teach other coaches how to use this content? Well, of course I would. I mean, I'm a servant. Absolutely. And then we got into this program, and the first 6 to 9 months was, okay, but first we need you to look at your stuff. We need you to look at your limiting beliefs. We need you to look at how your strengths, you might be overusing and using inappropriately in an inappropriate situation. And if they had put that on the syllabus, I would not have signed up. Now that was my experience. Now, I know you've got a more elevated, more spiritual appreciation for what you were getting into.
Galen, when I tell you that first day, Keith Brooks had me straight boohoo crying, needing tissues, needing to run to the bathroom because he was coaching me using the things to help us. You know, we had to have the experience. I was like, oh my gosh, I did not come for this. I came to learn to help other people. I didn't come for this for me. But when I saw how powerful it was and how much of my soul was just in turmoil, even though I was great at performing, I could perform. But when the curtains closed and I had to deal with me before I could help someone else, it was a whole nother layer of learning that I had no idea that I had signed up for. It was eye-opening and literally revolutionary because it was so much of what I needed in order to push my own practice to another level. I was ignoring all of the emotional intelligence signs in coaching. I was ignoring it in speaking and engaging in my own personal relationships. You know, my spidey senses might have gone up here or there. I may have adjusted a little bit, but intentionally, on purpose? No, no, no. Now, I have coaching sessions where the first 10 minutes, the person's like in full tears, not because I'm orchestrating them to cry, but because we're not going to dance around it. Like, we're not going to perform through this. Like, let's actually do the work. And they're like, Dr. Precious, this is our first session. What are you doing to me? I'm like, I'm not doing it. It's just having the space. It's just taking the time to slow down, to see all the stuff that's underneath the rug that you're tripping over. Like it's there. It's there.
Hey, it's not too late. Hit that subscribe button so you're sure to catch the next episode. If you're really enjoying the vibe, leave us a review or become a VIP for guests and show exclusives. Cheers.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.